理课堂听 class.com
Chapter 4 Getting Ready to Set Sail. When we went on board the Pequod, Captain Peleg stopped us.
"You didn't tell me Queequeg was a human eater," he said in a shocked voice.
"It's our ship's rules that people who weren't born Christian aren't allowed aboard unless they've changed their religious beliefs to accept Christianity. Has Queequeg accepted Christianity? Do you have his papers to show he is now a Christian?"
"He became a member of the First Congregational Church," I said.
"Isn't that the church headed by Deacon Coleman? I walk past it every Sunday, and I've never once seen Queequeg among the members. You aren't lying to me, are you?"
"Listen," I replied. "He was born a member of that church and is even a deacon himself."
"Please now," said the captain. "What church are you talking about?"
I said, "The First Congregational Church of the World." I was amazed at my own bravery.
"This is the church where you and I and all mother's sons pray in. Everyone belongs to that church. Though we have some small differences in belief, we share the one grand belief in God, and it's because of this that we all join hands in this church."
"I must say that I've never heard a better lesson on religion," said Peleg.
"Perhaps the position of ship priest would suit you better. But tell me, has your friend Queequeg ever harpooned a whale?"
Queequeg himself had heard the question and decided to take the test right then and there. He jumped onto the bulwarks and then onto the bow of one of the hanging fishing boats. Holding his harpoon high above his head, he called out,
"Hey, Captain, can you see that small drop of oil underwater there? Well, let's say that it's a whale's eye. Well, look then."
Using his sharp aim, Queequeg threw the harpoon into the water and struck the shiny oil spot out of sight.
"Now," said Queequeg, as he pulled in the line of his harpoon, "if that was a whale's eye, then that whale is now dead."
This convinced Peleg to sign him aboard. When Queequeg had to sign his name on paper, he copied a tattoo that was on his left arm. After signing aboard the Pequod, we decided to walk around Nantucket for a while. We were slowly walking along the street when we were stopped by a stranger. He looked like a beggar. He was dressed in rags and had strange spots and marks all over his face.
"Good fellows, have you just signed aboard that ship?"
he asked, pointing his finger at the Pequod like it was a harpoon.
"Yes," I answered. "We just signed the papers this morning."
"Was there anything in your contract telling you about your souls?"
"About our what?" I asked. I was quite shocked by this question.
"Well, maybe your souls are too weak to care about it," said the stranger. "But he's got enough planned to take care of your souls, he does. Old Thunder."
"Who's Old Thunder?" I asked.
"Captain Ahab, of course. Haven't you heard about him?"
The poorly dressed stranger seemed to have lost a bit of his mind. Still, I decided to answer in a very normal way. "He knows the whaling business, and I've heard he's a good captain."
"Those are both true. But what about that other business with the whale?" "Oh, well, never mind. You've already signed your names on the papers already. I guess somebody or other has to go with him. God have pity on you. Good morning. And may the heavens look after you."
"You can't trick us into believing there's something wrong," I said. "It's easy to look like you have a secret and know something we don't. Come on, Queequeg, let's leave this crazy man."
Well, then, I say good morning to you, he said, as he turned to go.
Tell us your name, will you, stranger?
Elijah, he answered.
Queequeg and I quickly walked away. We both agreed that the ragged old sailor was a fake who was trying to get us to sign aboard another ship. But that name, Elijah, made me stop and think. The Elijah in the Bible had been a special holy man who had warned of bad things to come. We had to wait a few days before leaving dock. The Pequod had first to be loaded with all the needed supplies for a 3-year voyage. During this time, I kept asking for Captain Ahab. However, I always got the same answer. I was told that Captain Ahab was getting better and would be coming on board soon. I was a little puzzled because nobody would tell me what was wrong with him. Finally, Queequeg and I received word that we'd soon be setting sail, that is, leaving soon. I still hadn't met Captain Ahab. I started to feel uncomfortable about spending 3 years on a ship, serving a captain I'd never seen. Queequeg and I had to arrive at the harbor a little before 6 o'clock in the morning. I thought I saw a couple of sailors running in front of us, but it was hard to see clearly in the morning mist. Suddenly we heard, "Stop!" We both felt a hand on our shoulders. It was Elijah.
"Are you still planning on going aboard?" he asked.
"We are, but that's no business of yours," I answered.
"Did you take a look at some of those men going towards the ship just now?" he asked.
"Yes, but it was too dark and I couldn't see anyone clearly," I said.
"Very dark, very dark. Well, see if you are able to find them when you get aboard. Good morning to you. I know I won't be seeing you again."
With those final words, he left. I had an uneasy feeling about how he seemed so sure he wouldn't be seeing us again. Under the command of Captain Peleg, the Pequod pulled up her anchor and set sail. When we were out of sight of the bay and already on the ocean, a small sailboat pulled up next to us. It took Captain Peleg back to shore. Queequeg and I still hadn't seen Captain Ahab, but we were able to meet the other members of the crew. The chief mate was named Starbuck. He was a thin man who seemed to me brave in a very practical way. He had lost both his father and his brother at sea, so he was not the kind of man to take foolish and unnecessary risks. The second mate was named Stubb. He was an easygoing, fearless man who had a habit of smoking continuously. I imagined I would sooner see his face without his nose than to see his mouth without its little black pipe. Flask was the third mate. He was a short, round, carefree sailor who seemed to think that hunting whales was just a lot of fun. This long voyage we were making around Cape Horn, which is at the southern tip of South America, seemed to be some kind of big joke or party to him. Each of these three fellows was in charge of commanding one of the Pequod's small whaling boats, and each had to choose his own harpooner. Chief Mate Starbuck decided upon Queequeg. Stubb decided on Tashtego, a Massachusetts Indian, and Dagu, a gigantic African, became Flask's harpooner. The three mates were taking turn at command of the Pequod. I had still seen nothing of Captain Ahab. A few days had passed since we'd left Nantucket. One day, finally, I came on deck for the afternoon watch. With a sudden shiver running up my back, I saw him. He was standing on deck so fiercely and seriously that I was reminded of a bronze statue that was tall and wide of form. There was a thin white scar that went from where his gray hair began, right down his face and neck until it could no longer be seen inside his clothing. That scar reminded me of a line one can see in a great tree that has been struck and marked by lightning. One of Captain Ahab's legs was made of ivory, the ivory of the smooth bone of a whale's jaw. Even though the ship was rocking, Captain Ahab was able to stand firmly on that ivory leg. I wondered how he was able to do so without falling over. Then I saw that a half-inch hole had been cut on each side of the officer's quarter-deck, which is where the officers walk on deck. His ivory leg fit perfectly into that hole. It kept him erect as he stared silently out at the ever-rocking ocean. Captain Ahab seemed to have a mighty problem on his mind.